Hey, welcome to another week of Fox on Sports here on Bedford 105.1. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And really, I guess if I was being completely honest, then why wouldn't I be? Because what else do I have to be? If I lie, I have to remember the lie and everything that goes along with it. Where if I'm honest, I can just be honest and, you know, it jibes with reality. I haven't watched any sports this week, with the exception of one thing.
I knew there'd be an exception.
I don't know. There's the exception. Well, I guess the... I mean, and that's really the quality that you look for in your sports talk radio host,
yeah,
is that they haven't actually watched anything they're about to talk about.
Right.
So,
well, you've watched some high school basketball.
I watched. Okay, so there are two things. One, we had Wednesday morning at McKelvey. We had pitchers and catchers for high school, so I was there for that.
Okay.
Which is always fun. And then yesterday we had a hitting workout at a facility in Manchester, which was also, we do it every week. It's always fun. At some point, we'll probably have to have Billy Chapman on to talk about all the contraptions that he's bought.
Sounds fun.
You've seen Tin Cup.
I have.
You know the scene where he gets the yips and he comes out and he's got like all these things all over him?
I'll
find it for you, but
I got distracted for a second because I actually heard an interview about Tin Cup. The filming of it.
Really?
This week.
Really?
I meant to tell you about it. It's one of the things I forgot to mention.
Oh, wow. Well, we can talk about that. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later,
because yeah,
that's something that I could probably talk about in my sleep, which that may also happen on this show, because my now 3-year-old lab whippet idiot dog has decided that his favorite pastime is to wake me up every day at 3 a.m. and go to the bathroom. Not until I've let him out. So, I mean, it's not like, hey, human, watch this. It's more of like a, hey, we'll go downstairs, and I let him out. And, you know, yeah, it somehow this has turned into a really bad habit. So I'm now somnambulist, sleepwalking while I just live. We will talk about Tin Cup, because that's a fun topic. So high school basketball, or high school baseball, is something that I saw this week.
Right.
Which I really can't wait to have Billy on and talk about the season when the time comes. And obviously we have to wait a little bit until tryouts and roster shakeout and all that. But I do think it's going to be a fun season. It's, obviously we know a lot of the names that are coming back year over year. But it's just a fun group of kids too. So, but the thing that we saw this week was, and I go back to what it was like, last Friday? Was that the Goffstown game? Was that,
I
or
believe
was that
so.
2 weeks ago? I don't, it's all blending together. Anyway, the Goffstown game where the gym was full, the game that we had on Wednesday night deserved a gym that was as full as it was for that Goffstown game.
That's right. You're talking about the Pinkerton game.
Yes. And the boys beat Pinkerton, too.
I saw that.
Which Pinkerton boys have now fallen to 1-13, which
I saw that as well.
Kind of crazy that when you have a student body of 3,200 that you can't put together a juggernaut of a basketball team, but I digress.
I had the same thought this morning when I was looking at their schedule, and you just wonder what it is that led to that. I mean, certainly from what we've seen from Coach Buskey on the girls' side, she seems like a terrific coach.
I enjoy her. Yeah,
and that can make a big difference.
Yeah, a good coach really does make all the difference. And she is one who has put together a good team year over year. This year's team, and one of our topics later will be multi-sport athletes, but this year's team was missing a pretty vital cog from last year's team, who is now... as you mentioned it on the broadcast, she has taken her talents to Durham.
Yes.
You said she's taken her talents to UNH, but and that's Brooke Kane, who was the NHIAA Girls Player of the Year the last 2 years. Brooke Kane was one who was certainly a treat to watch, but this game that we got the other day sort of had everything from a back and forth early on to Bedford with that big run, a 12-0 run that wound up putting them up, 11-0 run? Put them up 18-7. They went up by as many as 12. It looked like they were just going to salt the thing away, but kind of the sort of Pinkerton magic was the defense that was being played ultimately made it so that Pinkerton got themselves back into the game. We talked about it during the game. the run that got Pinkerton the lead wasn't what you think of, where, like, when I think of a run in basketball, it's like there's a hole in a pipe. And, like, all right, I have one hand and I'm trying to make it so the water doesn't fall out here. Uh-oh, now there's water coming out here. Like, I can't stop this. Like, there's nothing I can do to stop this. That wasn't what that run felt like at all.
No, it wasn't like Bedford was performing poorly and Pinkerton made their run. I mean, it was one of those deals where Pinkerton is a successful team, top five seed, and they hit a couple shots. And we also talked on the broadcast about how Coach Gibbs called a couple of timely timeouts, at least in my opinion. And so the game was sort of broken down also. It wasn't like, you know, an 11-0 run over the course of 3 or 4 minutes, and all of a sudden you call timeout and you try to figure out what to do. You know, it was just a matter of, you know, missed basket here, maybe one turnover, and Pinkerton hit a couple clutch shots. And then, you know, it was a great game to witness, you know, even leading up to such an incredible climax, because you had two great coaches, two, you know, veteran teams, you know, playing hard. I mean, that was some intense back and forth there in the second half. And, you know, it was sort of the tale of two halves, where in the first half, the defense sort of won out. You know, the second quarter was only 7-7 in scoring. But then in the second half, both teams picked it up offensively, but the defensive intensity picked up as well. And so it was just great to see that back and forth down the stretch.
It really was. And the weird thing with Pinkerton was they sort of kept changing who the number one option was, where, all right, it's going to be Ava Ingles for a little bit. She ran off, what, 8 or 10 points in that second half. And then it was Jesse Ames, who hit a three, as well as, I think, three other buckets in the second half. It was like, all right, we're going to pay attention to this one. Then the other one's going to sort of do a little bit of damage. What we saw on a couple of occasions was some of Bedford's big shooters. And really, if you think about it, the difference in the game ultimately was a couple of Bedford's big shooters got out in space and got free to take a shot. And Allie knocked down a big three. Allie Morgan did. And then in addition to that, Isabella King hit a three late, where it was almost like she was on ice skates and was able to stop, and everybody else just went gliding right by her. She calmly feathery three, and that was three of her 20 in the game. But you know, really, our guest who's going to come on here in about 3 minutes is the story of the game. And when we talked about it during that last timeout that Coach Gibbs called, to your point, a well-called timeout to set everything up. I said
5.3 seconds to go.
5.3. I'm thinking Tyus Edney, Allie Morgan. If with the girls' basketball that we've watched to this point, and we didn't see BG, so I don't know. But if I'm thinking of one point guard in the state that I would be most comfortable with the ball in her hands in that situation, that's the one that had it. And Allie got just inside the three-point line. The defense sort of collapsed on her, and she had options. And by my reckoning, that was probably the fourth option. No disrespect to Emma, but the other options that she has are the ones that are if I was, we have no stats on this stuff, that are 1, 2, and 3 in scoring.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you raise a couple points there in terms of the play itself. We because you referenced Tyus Edney, you're, of course, referencing the fact that Allie would have enough time to drive the length of the court if nobody played strong defense and blocked her off. And so I think that was the first option. Take it, go hard. If you can find your way to the basket, you have time to go make a layup. You know, we did talk to Coach Gibbs briefly afterwards and got some insight into the play call. And certainly you had Isabella King over on the right wing, who was streaking, and if she was open, certainly she would have been an option. But as it turned out, they forced Allie to dribble left. Emma was in the left corner. And one thing we'll talk about is, as I watched the video again that we have on our Facebook page, Emma was in perfect shooting motion where she was crouched and ready to accept the pass. And then Allie made a perfect pass right in the shooting pocket. And so all Emma had to do was square up and knock it down. Which I don't say that lightly, to square up and knock that shot down. It's not just a shot that you're practicing in the gym with no one else watching, with nothing on the line.
No, and particularly to kind of go through the mental calculations of, okay, this is what the play has been drawn up with, that option number one has the ball, option number two is in the right corner, maybe I'm option number three. I Amanda Jonas had set that screen at about half. I've watched this a bunch. I feel like you. Amanda Jonas sort of set a screen just inside half court just to get Allie a little bit more space. So once she does that, she's sort of out of the play. Because where, you know, although we've seen Amanda hit from outside, where she does the most damage is in the paint. She's not going to get down in the paint in time to be super effective. So you have option one, option two. Emma's down in the corner and really has to be thinking, I probably not going to get this ball, but I should probably be ready for it if I do.
And that'll be fun to ask her, because the way that the play was developing and with the amount of time on the clock, certainly what you just said makes sense. She may have been thinking, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to get this pass. But also, after years of playing with Allie Morgan, I'm sure she was also thinking, if I'm open, then I should expect to get that pass.
Speaking of, all right, there we go. That was seamless. Emma, hey, it's Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. Hey, we really appreciate you taking time out of your school day to come join us.
No problem.
It's Friday. We got break next week.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I guess you guys are still around, but at least you don't have to go to school. Not that there's anything wrong with school. That's okay. And going to school is what ultimately has gotten you into Northwestern. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But the reason that we're dragging you onto the phone right now is to talk about Wednesday night's game. Andrew and I were just kind of going over some of the highlights. And as we were talking through it, and I'm going to audible and you can hit with question number one right after this. Allie's dribbling down court. You're in one corner. Isabella's in the other corner. What did you think the likelihood was that you were going to get a pass from Allie there and wind up taking the shot?
Oh, so incredibly small. And not even that. Like, I thought the chance was so small that I'd be the one taking that shot, because that the play we drew up was initially for Isabella to take a shot, and makes sense. She's our highest percentage shooter. And they ended up not pressing us, so we didn't have a play anymore. So Allie was dribbling down the court, and normally in transition, she has faked out and gone in for the layup, and that's what I expected her to do. And she told me after that she was so close to doing, and then she threw it out to me, and I shot immediately, and I don't even remember it. I've, like, seen all this through videos. It's like I was prepared to shoot and everything, and I really, like, can't believe it went in, and it was a great moment.
Oh, it was a phenomenal shot. We really enjoyed watching it, and we've been talking about it this morning here as the play developed, and you didn't have time to do anything but catch and shoot, but we talked about how you were in that perfect shooting motion already. You were crouched and ready to accept the pass. Allie put the pass right on the money. So, I mean, was it just sort of like one of those automatic things that you've practiced hundreds of times where you weren't really thinking and you're just sort of in the zone going through the moment and releasing the shot?
Yeah, definitely. Because going back and watching the video, I noticed the same thing, and I think it was just completely muscle memory to get ready for the shot and release right away. And I didn't think about it at all, and I think that's what helped and made it much more natural and why it went in, because I just wasn't thinking.
When it was in the air, did you expect it to go in? Did it feel like, oh, this was a perfect shot?
No, I actually was watching it in the air, and I thought it was to the side, and because you have shots where you look at it and you think, oh, this is in for sure. And that was not a shot I didn't think was going in.
Huh. Because it looked great, right? Yeah, right. Boy, I mean, throughout the entire process. Now, how about the celebration? What do you remember from that, if anything?
As soon as I saw it go in, I started screaming, and so did everyone else. Because everyone has told me that they were watching that shot, like holding their breath, and all of a sudden it went in, everyone reacted. And it was just such a great moment, everyone running on the court, everyone cheering.
One of my favorite parts of it, in watching the video a couple times, was the student section. And there were actually students who were jumping up and down. It was almost like they didn't know what to do. They couldn't contain their excitement. It was almost like they thought maybe we should storm the court, but maybe Corey Parker would get upset at us, so we're just going to stay here on the baseline.
I don't think Corey would have cared. I think Corey would have been all right with it right then. Go ahead.
Yeah, the student section was great, and actually the best student section we've had at our games all year, because you know, girls basketball is not as popular as boys basketball or boys hockey. So they've been pretty empty. So to have such a great crowd and then for that to happen when we had such a great crowd, it was just made the moment even better.
Now, it was something certainly that I'll never forget. And, you know, we talked about it with Coach Gibbs afterward and said something about it was a great capper thinking, all right, this is senior night. And he says, no, we still got plenty of work to do. And, of course, you do. There is another home game, which will be next week. And then you also have playoffs and hopefully a nice long run there. But for you, as one of the senior captains on the team, what are your thoughts about how the team has progressed and gelled so far this year?
So what's interesting is that our progress throughout the year, in a way, hasn't been linear at all. We've had our ups and downs throughout, one of our biggest downs being last week versus Merrimack. And we've gotten better at playing together, which is one of the biggest things we struggled with because we came into the season with a lot of, I guess, raw talent. We have two of the best players in the state, one the second highest scorer, and the other one of the best, if not the best, point guards in the state. And this entire season, it's been about learning how to play together because when we're all working together, we've been invincible. And, you know, we saw it in that first quarter against BG. We were holding our own, and even that first half. We saw it again playing Pinkerton. We, first half, did amazing. And it's been learning how to maintain that and do that every game so that we can succeed. So that's usually when we've lost and have not been at our best. It's usually when we're not playing together.
Well, it's hard enough, Emma, to, you know, come into a season with a new mix of players and try to gel, but you've had to deal with a ton of injuries on this team. What's it been like trying to navigate that?
It's been pretty crazy and to the point where it's almost amusing. And we've joked around that our team is cursed, but it's definitely been hard. Our biggest loss being Catherine Penick, who's our great sixth man. And it was hard to lose her, but, I mean, I said this to someone, as cheesy as it is, next man up, as the Patriots say, and we've had players step up and come in, even if only for a few minutes, and have played their hearts out, and having everyone involved like that and being willing to come in when we need them has been great and has made the injuries no big deal.
We did see it the other night with Marina Braga when she came in late in the game too. She was a real shot in the arm for the team, and you talk about next man up. She was one that I don't think we were expecting to see at the point that she came in, but really brought a lot of positive energy. And so I guess the other question I want to get back to the rest of your week. So what's it been like being Emma Rosenbaum after hitting a shot like that for the rest of the week?
It's been pretty crazy. it's been a lot of fun. The videos, obviously, everywhere. My dad felt the need to send it to everyone we've ever known.
But I would do the same thing. I'm not going to lie.
But it's fun. I think it's the coolest thing that's ever going to happen to me, so I'm letting it play out.
I don't know. I mean, you still got a lot of runway, so I wouldn't sell yourself short like that. It's a fun thing, but who knows? You might cure cancer. you never know. So, so for you and the team, what are your goals the rest of the season?
We're a team that tries to not think far ahead. We always say we have one more game. So right now, I guess our goal is to beat Portsmouth, which is who we play tonight. But I mean, personally, and what I've talked with Ali and Amanda, my fellow captains, is we want to make it as far in playoffs as we can. And I think our biggest goal is BG, whether that's somehow beating them or holding our own against them and making it really hard for them to take that win, because with losing the Merrimack game, it seems pretty certain that we will be in their bracket for playoffs, which is a little disappointing. We were hoping to be in the other bracket as the second or third seed, but since we can't do anything about it now, that's our new goal and what we're going to work towards.
Well, the 1980 U.S. Olympic team had to get through Russia to win the gold medal anyway, and everybody always forgets it. And you've probably seen the movie. What was the movie?
Miracle
was the name of the movie. I remember the old Miracle on Ice one, but the game where they beat the Soviet Union wasn't the gold medal game. They still had to go and beat Finland. So Coach Gibbs should cue that one up, make you guys sit there and watch Miracle. It'd be a good week for it.
And we have faith that you'll do it.
Yeah.
We know you can. I saw the first game this season. Like you said, you stayed close there in the first half, so you've got that experience. You can make it happen. So, oh well, it comes one round earlier, and then you beat somebody else for the state championship. So we'll be looking forward to that. And then, of course, after this season, when you're at Northwestern, we're curious, do you plan to play any hoops once you're out there?
So for the longest time, I was very adamant that I would be done with basketball in high school. Not that I don't love it, but I was going to be ready for something new. And this season, Coach Gibbs has been pushing at me to look at club basketball. So right now, I don't know, because he's definitely made me consider it. So I think I'll see when I get there whether or not club basketball appeals to me. So right now, it's wide open.
And final question. Has Emma Rosenbaum declared a major yet at Northwestern?
Yes, I'll be majoring in journalism.
Awesome. All right. Well, I was going to say, if you ever want to come back and do a little color commentary on one of the broadcasts, you're more than welcome to come on back. You're ready for radio.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, we really sincerely appreciate the time. Good luck tonight against Portsmouth. That means what? Do you guys get an early release to go all the way out there?
Unfortunately not. We leave around 3:45, but I do miss the days when we got to miss school to go.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're on the freshman team, that's the benefit, is you get the early game, so you get the early release. So, all right, well, we really do appreciate it. Congratulations again, and we look forward to catching up soon.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
That was our hero on the hardwood for this week, Emma Rosenbaum, one of the three senior captains at Bedford High School. And I say it every time we have a student on. All right, and I saw it yesterday at batting practice, and the things that the kids are talking about and the concepts they understand and the subtext that they get from something else that somebody has said. I don't remember having that depth of thought when I was 43, let alone 17 or 18. And to hear Emma talk about the season as a linear progression, I kind of went, what?
No, that was great. I mean,
I looked at you when she said, what?
Well, one of the thoughts I had, I thought, where you're going with this is we need to interview more student athletes on the show.
Absolutely. I mean, particularly when you have seniors who have managed time and open periods and whatever, like, no doubt.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun when we get to do it. So that was a real treat. Just as you mentioned, hero on the hardwood, incredible moment, so exciting and fun to relive it. But then, you know, you talk about the different perspective that these athletes have, and it's fun to hear about the different influences, like One Game at a Time from the Patriots.
Yep.
And, you know, that goes a long way.
Yes. And also to hear her talk, having read a lot about sports psychology and being in the zone, when somebody gets in the zone, it's this sort of out-of-body experience. You don't remember how things feel. You just sort of see a result. She got there for about 2 seconds where she just wasn't expecting it and hit a really big shot. I don't remember what the call was. I may have been in the zone, or I may have just been really tired.
You were in the broadcasting zone. Yeah, you transitioned right into a sort of elevated level of audio and nailed the call. But
it wasn't quite a Jack Buck, touch 'em all, Joe, you'll never hit a bigger home run, although I... In hindsight, touch them all, Emma. You'll never hit a bigger shot.
Well, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. That was a pretty big one. We still have the playoffs look forward to.
I know.
But I, you know, as you know, I studied psychology in college and focused a lot on sports psychology. And certainly she hit on it where she said it was just muscle memory, where, again, something she practiced thousands of times in the gym, and that's really what she just went into. It was just, I know how to do this. I'm just going to let my body take over, and that's what happened.
It's amazing what you can do when your brain doesn't get in the way.
That's right.
It's weird. So, all right, well, congrats to Emma and the rest of the girls' team on that big win. It was a lot of fun. Glad we got to, I would say, probably in the top five thrills of my broadcasting career.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, I don't remember a more exciting play in the games we've broadcast here in Bedford in any sport.
The play where Ryan Giuliano scored from first base against Portsmouth last year was a good one.
That was the first one that came to mind.
I would put that one up there.
But not more exciting.
Not more exciting. I had Clay Hensley, who pitched in the major leagues for a little bit. Hensley threw a perfect game for us in Hagerstown in 2003, 7-inning perfect game. That was a lot of fun. And just walk-off home runs. I've talked about this one on the air. We had a kid named Mike Brown in Kansas City who hit a 3-run walk-off, and he just crushed it. And right after he hit it, he had a false tooth fall out. And so he's reaching on the ground for the false tooth. This, in terms of, there's always something beautiful about when unexpected things happen. And if it had just been Allie, and it would have been a big thrill and we would have been excited about it. But the fact that, wait a second, this is completely going according to Hoyle, and wait, there's this different thing that's happening. And we have the third senior captain who is truly a grinder. And,
didn't even get to ask her about her defense. No, I can't believe it.
That's not the topic for this week. We'll have her back again.
Okay.
She's a grinder. Like, she plays hard, winds up, diving on the floor, getting the ball, whatever. Like, and you can appreciate that quality of play. And that's not the quality of play that exists in the big type. That's the quality of play that shows up in the little type or the Bo Outlaw hustle board, that kind of stuff. So. I wasn't expecting that. She wasn't expecting that. And that's what makes it beautiful. And she hit it.
And that's what makes a championship team, is you have all these different players who contribute in different ways and can contribute in different ways when they're called upon. And, you would reference it earlier with the different scoring weapons that Pinkerton showed that night. Both these teams have that depth where, Isabella scored 20 that night. Allie had 15. We've seen Amanda score in double digits multiple times. She wasn't called upon to score on this particular night. And even in that play, she wasn't called on to score. She set the pick to help free up Allie a little bit in space. And if you want to have a championship team, you have to have people with varied skills who are willing and able to step up in different ways.
Right. And also realize that there are going to be nights that you're not going to lead the team in scoring or be second on the team in scoring. There are going to be nights that, in the case of Amanda, she had some very big blocks in that game and certainly made her presence felt on the defensive end. And, yeah, that doesn't show up as points, but it shows up as a difference maker in helping your team win a game. So,
and for the people who watch really closely, you and I know that Emma's defense, and although we didn't get to ask her about it today, is a huge factor of their success. And it may not be the headline in the paper if they win the state championship, but we know it goes a long way towards getting the team to that point.
And defense and setting picks does not go into slumps.
That's right.
We've talked about this. It's like if you're fullback in the NFL, that doesn't go into a slump.
Nope.
It is what it is. So, all right, we'll take a quick break, come back, and talk about a bunch of other things that I haven't really figured out yet. You are listening to Fox on Sports. I'm Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to this sports show that we do once a week here from the studio up on Meeting House Road. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And, we have random topics that occasionally we talk about. And sometimes you get presented with athletes who can play multiple sports. We've seen it in our time. We saw one the other night for Pinkerton, Alyssa Damaro, who good defender, obviously good athlete out there on the basketball court, but she has made her name on the softball field. We've seen it on a number of occasions. Tim Green is one who has been very good at basketball, can play football as well. Trevor Anibal, some of these Wednesday morning sessions that we go to, he just sits there and drains, and he looks like he'd be a nice asset for Mark Elmendorf coming off the bench, but Trevor's a baseball guy. There are a lot of athletes, year one, who, all right, you men's softball, I don't know that that counts as a sport, but, the best first baseman I've ever worked with on a baseball diamond, that's for sure, and then you get you on the basketball court, and it's the competition and sort of tenacity that goes along with it. But we started talking about who would be your five athletes if you were a
scout, perhaps
scout, and we're saying, hey dude, you may want to give up this gig and go for the other gig. So do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll start with number five.
All right,
we'll work our way towards the top.
All right,
number five for me is a gentleman who's been in the news recently as we've been hearing his thoughts on Major League Baseball. Guy who doesn't really know how to market himself, that's Mike Trout.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I should have thought of him.
So for Mike Trout, I would put him as a running back in the NFL.
Oh, my God.
And I think with that strong, sturdy, smaller frame, he would be a real challenge to try to bring down.
I think he'd also be a really nice weak side linebacker, picking somebody up out of the backfield, particularly with the way that he sort of sees the field in the outfield.
Oh, yeah.
And his intelligence level.
Well, yeah.
So I didn't think of Trout. I like that one. My number five one, I'm going with another center fielder, Lorenzo Cain.
Okay.
Who Lo Cain was famously, we've talked about this on the show before, got cut from the basketball team, was walking around school after that happened. The baseball coach grabbed him and said, can you show up at baseball practice? I need a player on my JV team. And Cain grabbed a glove that was the wrong hand of glove for him, because he thought, if I'm a right-handed player, I need a glove that goes on my right hand. And but obviously that didn't hurt him.
They sorted it out eventually.
They sorted it out. For my money, Cain is a criminally underrated player who we talked with Emma Rosenbaum about doing all the little things and playing hard and playing gritty and playing tough. To me, that's Lo Cain. And I think he would bring the same exact skill set to the basketball court too.
Oh, I'm sure he would. Number four for me is a fellow on the pitch, Lionel Messi.
Okay.
Okay. My favorite goal scorer out there in soccer, and just incredible footwork. So quick with his feet. The guy's a magician. I could see him being a slot receiver, a la Julian Edelman, Wes Welker. The guy is so shifty and quick, and we know that with those guys, you don't have to be a tall, you know, you don't need to be 6'3", 6'4", to be a successful wide receiver.
Did you say Welker?
Yeah.
I was Googling, because he's about Welker's size. He's about 5'7".
Exactly. So give Messi a year to put on 15, 20 pounds of muscle, and I think he could be a star wide receiver.
All right. And it's funny how we've now, I moved Lo Cain over to basketball. You moved Messi from soccer to football. I'm going to move LeBron from the basketball. He's got to be in your top five.
Oh, yeah.
And I was torn because I like him on it, and I like Zion Williamson on it as well. I almost think that Zion's body translates a little bit better for the NFL than LeBron's
really?
Does. Yeah.
For what position?
Tight end.
Okay.
Either one of them would be, to me, your dream option. I like Zion a little bit better as a tight end because he is, to me, he's built enough. He's like a slightly smaller version of Tony Boselli. Boselli, when we used to see him at when I was on campus at USC, if you saw him from 50 yards away, you would think that he was any of us, how he was built. Like, sometimes you see offensive linemen, and it's obvious that they're just these behemoth humans. Boselli was just like, if you took me and said, make that 140% of what it was, then you get a guy who's like 6'7", 290. To me, Zion's not far from that, but he's athletic enough that he could catch a pass.
Interesting.
But is going back to LeBron, his athleticism is unquestioned. And I would and you look at the success that some of the former basketball players have had moving over to the NFL, namely Antonio Gates. And you say, all right, could LeBron do it? I think he's a bit past the window of when he would have done it, but it would have been fun to see.
You'll hear my thoughts on LeBron later in the show. I'm going to go to my number three now, and it's Patrick Mahomes.
Okay. My number three, too. Yeah.
We know that he has a history in baseball. His dad played in the major leagues. And even if you didn't know that, if you watched multiple games, you'd see the creativity. He'll throw from different arm angles. He got a cannon arm, so he would just be phenomenal on the mound, be able to mix up his pitches. And he obviously has the mentality to do it as well.
Not to mention, he's in Kansas City, so he could be a monarch. I mean, really. That was Satchel Paige's stock in trade, was different arm angles, different deceptive things. Obviously, he threw hard, and he was ageless. But Satchel Paige was also well-known for the B-ball, the balls that he would throw that would sort of disappear, changing up his delivery. For him, it was as much of a mind game as anything else. And Mahomes has that level of intelligence that it would just be fun to watch him dissect a lineup. And, legend has it, he threw as hard as 92. So, all right, go to your number two.
Number two for me, Steph Curry.
Golf. Okay.
We know that he's dabbled in it. He's played a couple events. And the guy, the one thing that you think about is he has the incredible fundamentals as a shooter. I mean, many consider him to be the best shooter ever. And if he would dive into golf in that same way, I mean, he's already legitimate enough to play with pros, then I don't think there'd be any stopping him.
The fun part with that, too, is he could get to a point where he's 35 and quits the NBA and goes full-time. You could see that.
Yes.
It's not impossible that it could happen. But as any of the professional golfers will tell you, regardless of the level, it's not something that you can kind of dip your toe in the water of. It's either you're all in or don't even bother, because you're going to be struggling to make a cut. The certain exceptions to that are guys like Tiger, who, because of physical reasons, may not play every tournament. But in a lot of these cases, they're so strong mentally and they know what they need to do to prepare that they can get themselves ready. My number two is a guy who, I don't even know if he's still playing in the major leagues anymore, but if he's not, it just happened. He was an All-American wide receiver at Notre Dame, Jeff Samardzija.
Right.
He was one that, as a USC fan, I remember him just destroying USC. Great wide receiver, big, fearless, and, almost, I'm trying to, like, sort of a Brandon Marshall type in terms of body type, in terms of willingness to go up and get the ball, but looked at it, and the Cubs took him in the fifth round, and he signed with them and didn't really ever look back, and had a very good major league career as a starter. But I always looked at him, too, as a guy that the first thing I think of when I think of his name is watching him with the gold helmet on.
That's right. Good memories there.
If you're not rooting for Notre Dame, yes.
That was kind of you to reference his talent like that. That was that's big of you.
Yep.
So for me, getting back to LeBron, he is my number one as an NFL tight end. Just an incredible athlete. And can you imagine, he's listed at 6'9", 250. And he's one of those guys for me, as I've gone to a lot of Celtics games, he is one that you say, whoa. He's even bigger, stronger, faster in person than on TV. And so can you imagine him as a tight end? Not only does he have incredible hands and talent, but then to be able to maybe go up and catch a pass 11 or 12 feet in the air, I mean, there'd just be no stopping him.
No.
Not to mention he's absolutely strong enough to run right over you in the open field.
I wouldn't want to get in front of him. My number one, although I did think his rookie season was and I would like to see what he does on the baseball diamond, Kyler Murray.
Yes.
That's an easy one. Yep. The only guy ever drafted first round MLB and NFL. It wouldn't surprise me at some point to see him go back. I guess the thing that, you look at a lot of great athletes and a lot of studies that have been done over the years, that Hakeem Olajuwon, his great footwork in the paint came not from basketball, came from soccer. And you look at a lot of athletes at the high school level who translate what they're doing from one to the other. I'm sorry this entire segment is me referencing USC and Notre Dame, but Rodney Peete, who was a Heisman Trophy contender, had a very long career in the NFL. He was a great baseball player at USC. Jack Del Rio, everybody knows him as an NFL coach. He was a linebacker, but he also played. He was a catcher at USC. John Jackson, wide receiver at USC, played on the baseball team. You don't see that to the extent now that you did, you know, and that's without even mentioning the two most obvious, Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders.
Right.
Like,
because they actually did it. We're talking about the crossover athletes who haven't played that professional sport.
Right. But the fact that just getting out and playing anything for the love of playing it, like that's, you know, the hardest thing about, you know, just the amount of screen time that everybody's got at this point and the amount of specialization that everybody's got at this point and everything like that is you lose the, I'm just going to go out and shoot hoops, not for any purpose. I'm not working on anything. I'm just going to shoot baskets. Like I used to meet a buddy of mine at, there was a court between my house and his house, you know, it was a quarter mile from mine, half mile from his. We used to meet there every night after dinner and go shoot baskets. Neither one of us played varsity basketball in high school. We'd just go and play and like talk about stuff. No phones, obviously, because it was the dark ages. You know, but nobody ever, you start working on, well, all right, that's how you learn a left hand. You know, my one of my kids says to me, I can't dribble with my left hand. Well, there's one way to fix that. It's called dribbling with your left hand.
Right.
Like nobody's born ambidextrous. Like it feels awkward when you start, but you got to practice.
And, you know, getting back to the possibilities, the one for me that would be fun to see is Steph Curry, because when he retires from basketball, he's not going to need to play sports to earn money. It would only really be for the fun, the challenge of it, for him to play golf. And the advantage that he would have is he wouldn't have 15 years of wearing down those golf muscles, the knee, the hip, the back. I think it could really happen.
I would say that I would be surprised if it didn't. Well, he is, first of all, okay, I'm not going to understate the role that genetics play in something. And obviously his father, Del, played in the NBA for a while, and that enters into the equation. But when you're a little kid, being able to go to an NBA arena with your dad to go to work, like, the rest of us, if we go to work in an office, go to work in an office. Like, the kids don't get to go and shoot baskets. And not for nothing, all right, there's a shooting coach kicking around. You start taking a couple shots, and the shooting coach says, hey, this, hey, that, why don't you work on this? Here's a drill for you.
When you and I, on the broadcast on Wednesday, we talked about playing around the world.
Yeah.
And when you and I played that, it was either in the backyard or at that court in the middle that you would meet your friend at. For Steph Curry, it was on an NBA right. floor against NBA players. I mean, I've heard multiple older NBA players say that they remember shooting around with Steph Curry in an NBA gym when he was like 12.
But also think about what that does. It makes it so that when you go from Davidson to the NBA, it's not this weird, I'm in this arena and this arena is so big. It's,
oh, yeah. Oh, I'm back to where I started as a kid.
Here I am. No big deal.
I'm back.
It's fine. Like you, the tiers in minor league baseball take you from, you know, or at least they do now until it gets contracted. And that'll, I guess, get us into a major league baseball mood where we can talk about that. But it takes you from short A, where you might have 500 or 1,000 watching you, all the way to AAA, where you got, you know, if you're at a Sacramento or a Lehigh Valley, you got 10 or 12,000 people watching you, to the major leagues where, you know, you go and you step on the mound and there's 30, 40, 50,000 people watching you, depending. Like, there's no substitute for the first time you get on that mound wherever and go, God, this place is big.
Right.
Like, but if you've been there, you can act like you've truly been there before. So it will be interesting with him, too, not to mention the level of competitiveness that he has. I wouldn't put it past him, not to mention he has a very supportive family existence. Again, I could see his wife just saying, yeah, go,
right.
Try it, see what happens.
Right.
You know, and that's, you can't underestimate that either. So, all right, getting to baseball, because that's, I, on the flip side of this whole Houston Astros garbage, the real positive thing is we're talking about baseball.
Yeah. We've so got
that
more elements of that controversy. We also got the new proposal for a different playoff system. But the latest, of course, this week with the Houston Astros scandal is more talk from Mike Fiers and about Mike Fiers. Big Poppy took a shot at him. I don't think it was justified. I think I'm fine with what Mike Fiers did, and I didn't get to find the article again, but I think I saw Jonathan Lucroy say that the Athletics informed Major League Baseball about the Astros' alleged sign-stealing system before Mike Fiers did anything.
Right.
So he wasn't the original source of information for Major League Baseball. I haven't gotten a chance to follow that through to see if Major League Baseball's made a statement. If the A's are telling Major League Baseball about this, what happened to that investigation?
Jonathan Lucroy says he found himself in a unique position to observe the sign-stealing tactics of the Astros. He played for the A's, the Rangers, and the Angels at that point in time, and he said, I knew about that 2 years ago that it was going on. I know it just recently came out. Everyone in baseball knew, especially in that division. We were all aware of the Astros doing those things, and it was up to us to outsmart them, I guess you could say. It's kind of hard when you have a computer program that breaks your signs. We actively change signs. Every single pitch, we were changing signs. You had to, because they would relay them to second, stealing them from first too, from between your legs. They had a very intricate system going on. We were well aware of it, and it was a challenge. It was a mental challenge to really overcome that. It's easier said than done, but it's a shame, and I'm glad it came out, and I'm glad it came to light. So there are times, too, you know, in the case of David Ortiz.
Let me add one more comment from Lucroy. According to Lucroy, the Athletics informed Major League Baseball about their experience with the Astros, but no investigation was started until Fiers went on the record with the Athletic in November.
It was just an obvious that we think that there's going to be some sort of blowback at this point, and we need to do something because it's now public. Which, if that's the case, you know, shame on Rob Manfred for doing that. Like, that's not there. If it was wrong, it's wrong before it comes out, not only when it comes out. In the case of David Ortiz, there's really, you know, he's obviously uninformed. Why you got to talk about it after? That's my problem. Why nobody said anything while it was going on? Like, so, you know, if what Jonathan Lucroy is saying, they said something about it.
The A's said something.
The A's,
players told other players about it.
It was an open secret.
And,
but Major League Baseball chose not to pursue it, is what it is.
It's a real shame because, you know, Mike Fiers is getting death threats. His family's getting death threats because of this. And it all could have been prevented to some degree if Major League Baseball had actually investigated it earlier and put a stop to it sooner. Fewer players would have been affected in a negative way.
Right.
The biggest complaint from most players around Major League Baseball, there's two. It impacted the games that we played against the Astros, so it hurt my stats. It hurt our team's performance. But then also, you know, the players' careers that got derailed, the pitchers who went in there and got shelled and then got sent down or released. I mean, Major League Baseball could have prevented that for a lot of different players.
Right. It turned into a bad situation where somebody clearly had a competitive advantage. And as the ethical touchstone Jose Canseco put it, if somebody gave me a choice of using PEDs or knowing what pitch was coming, I would want to know what pitch was coming. That's way more important than using PEDs.
Right.
You know, that's – and he would know.
I was going to say classic quote. Side note, he didn't add that next sentence of, well, if I didn't know what pitch was coming, then I'd rather take PEDs if that was my only option.
Right. That's logical. But,
right.
I mean, in his case, honestly, he's one that I don't think needed to take PEDs. He thought it was going to get him ahead more so than he already did. I think he would have been a great player without him. And it's a shame that a guy like him, who was the first 40-40 guy, has his reputation tarnished. And obviously, the fans at Fenway were chanting steroids back in the mid-80s when, or mid to late 80s when Canseco was playing for the Oakland A's, like, that was known at that point. Baseball had no drug testing in place. So, you know, why a commissioner would just sort of hope that this thing is going to go away, it's beyond me. Like, to me, this is the integrity of the game. And the shame of it, too, is, like, and casual fans might not think of it this way, but I think of Ryan Braun as an example, who won the MVP over Matt Kemp, maybe 09, 10. I don't remember what year, but Ryan Braun won that MVP, came out that he was using HGH after he'd been denying it. He still got to take home that hardware, or as Rob Manfred would call it, the piece of metal.
Right.
He still got to take... Why are you even saying that, by the way? He still got to take home that hardware. So every time I look at Braun, though, that is the first thing that crosses my mind, is I associate him with that automatically. For guys who were probably going to have good careers anyway, Bregman, Altuve... Nobody has, you know, some of the other guys have sort of avoided mention when it comes to this sort of thing. But the fact that, you know, they chose to make a decision that is going to tarnish the rest of their career, and that, you know, there are people who are making a case these guys should be banned from baseball. That's some serious stuff to be messing around with that Major League Baseball just sort of let go for a while.
Yeah, and you and I haven't talked about the penalties or lack thereof in relation to individual players on the Astros, but the thing I think would be best is you strip the World Series title, because that way you're not suspending individual players, you're not fining them, you don't have to go through the battle with the union about grievances and more disputes. So you don't even have to go down the road of saying, all right, these 8 hitters were guilty. You know, this guy gets 80 games, this guy gets 40. You don't have to deal with all that. You just take away the World Series title, and that is a real punishment to all those players and their legacies.
But it's just a piece of metal.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I'm not big into taking away trophies and banners. I don't really like it in college, because I think in college, what usually happens is the players get penalized for a championship or a Final Four team, and they weren't involved in the scandal. They weren't involved in breaking the NCAA rules or regulations. So there, I don't like it. But here, I think this is the best way to penalize the players.
I think it's the most logical way to go about it. Did you read Trevor Bauer's article on the Players Tribune?
I heard a bunch of different comments from him. I don't know if they're in that article or elsewhere.
Great article he wrote where he had questioned it. And Trevor Bauer, he's a unique dude. Love him or hate him. And, you know, he's not a guy that I would particularly want to talk about a whole lot of stuff with. I don't think we'd find a whole lot of middle ground. Although, you know what? He'd be pretty fun to talk about or to talk to, because he's a bright dude and he's thought about his positions, and he hasn't come to his positions casually. Like, if he's taking a position, it's because he believes in something. And even before any of this stuff came out, 2017, Trevor Bauer was like really at the forefront as more of a finesse pitcher, although he does throw hard, of trying to get his spin rate on his curveball up, and couldn't get it to a point that he wanted to, where it was truly going to bite, and couldn't figure out how some of these guys on the Astros had such higher spin rate than he did, and kind of attributed it to them doing something that was untoward. And sure enough, that comes out that was the case, and proves him right. And Trevor Bauer in that Players Tribune article basically says, like, I'm okay with people not liking me because I've made this choice that, all right, I was by myself working for hours every day so that I could get here. Kudos to him. And when you are in a situation when players are doing things and coaching staffs are doing things that are getting in the way of all of that hard work, that's where he kind of drew the line and said, wait a second, this is not a fair thing. So anyway, we'll see. I don't, my level of faith in Major League Baseball's, they are really and truly hoping that it just blows over.
Right.
It's not gonna.
It's not. They're backpedaling.
It's not gonna.
The Astros management's backpedaling. It's just not gonna work.
I'm astonished I didn't play in the major leagues. I didn't play in the minor leagues. I've been around baseball for a long time in some way, shape, or form. And for anybody to ever say, like the owner of the Astros did, I don't believe this had an impact on the outcome of the games, then you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
Then obviously, how are you so successful if you're so stupid?
Why did they do it if it didn't help? Why did Major League Baseball make a rule banning it if it didn't help?
But how could you ever know this game? Because if you're the owner, I figure you probably go to a lot of games. You would figure that you would know that knowing what pitch is coming might give you a little bit of an advantage.
Yeah.
Like, so I guess, I don't know, maybe people have been giving him too much credit and he's not as smart as he appears, but there's absolutely an advantage that comes. It's, I should share the video from my personal Facebook to the Fox on Sports Facebook. One of the biggest, best fights I ever saw in minor league baseball occurred because somebody accused one of our guys of peeking. Like, you know, you're at bat, you're looking back at the catcher. It wasn't peeking, but that was what caused the fight. You know, there's a reason that a catcher doesn't just say, hey, fastball, hey, curveball.
Right.
Because if that were the case, hey, the pitcher's just straight unhittable. But if you're a major league hitter, I mean, these guys are in a fraction, a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the population. You take players that aren't very good and you tell them what the pitch is, and then you take the best players in the world and you tell them what the pitch is, and you don't think that's going to impact the outcome, you're out of your mind.
Exactly.
All right. We got about 2 minutes to talk about the NBA. You won again. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It seems to be a recurring theme. You had 180. I had 132. We took the under in that one. I've been on a bad streak.
Yeah, under 307. Total was 312. That was unfortunate. I think we made the right play, though. Just too many threes right before the buzzer. But the great thing about the All-Star game was that Elam ending and the different fourth quarter, where you take the combined scores through the third quarter, you add 24 points to the team ahead, and you say, this is the target score. It's 157. Whoever gets there first wins. And we've talked about it before with the basketball tournament in the summer, the Elam ending. It's just a phenomenal structure for the end of a basketball game. And the way it played out in the All-Star game was you combine that with no commercials. And I heard that the fourth quarter took 42 minutes of real time. But it was one of the best quarters I've watched in years. It was 10 of the elite NBA players, 10 of the best players on the planet, playing their guts out on offense and defense, like it was the seventh game of the NBA Finals. And you just saw, you know, the top level of effort from all those guys and intensity that you want in a playoff game. And that's what we've wanted in an All-Star game for years and years, and we finally got it.
I really do like the Elam ending. I didn't watch the fourth quarter of the game, but do you think the NBA will ever get to that point?
I think they're going to phase it in here and there. They're going to do it in the All-Star game moving forward. I think there's a chance they'll do it in preseason. They may do it in the G League. They may do it in Summer League. I think you'll see it experiment. I actually heard a really good suggestion recently where why not do it in the regular season in NBA games in overtime? So yeah. If you get to overtime, pick a target score.
First
maybe
one to
seven.
X. Yeah.
And then there's no clock. It's just, let's go to seven. And the great thing, again, about the Elam ending is you always have a walk-off shot. You always have an Emma Rosenbaum in every game.
Nice to tie it all back together. So, all right, the only true problem with that is you only get one overtime.
True. Yeah, you don't get the five or six overtime games.
Yeah. So, it's a thought. So, anyway, thank you to our guest, the aforementioned Emma Rosenbaum, for joining us on the show. Thanks to everybody here at the station, Harry, Bill, George, and Colleen for all of the help. And thank you to my co-host and broadcast partner, Andrew Hansen, for lining up the interview with Emma. She did a great job on the air. So, and thanks to Kevin Gibbs for coordinating that, too. We will catch you, I guess, next week, maybe. I don't know. Have a great sports week. Don't cheer from the sidelines, or don't coach from the sidelines. You can cheer, but don't coach. You have been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.